BBC News at 6:30. This is Moira Stewart. Good morning. Books of condolence are being opened today in Sir Terry Wogan's home city of Limerick. Sir Terry, who was last on air on Radio 2 in November, died yesterday from cancer. The BBC's Director General, Tony Hall, called him a national treasure. Talks between David Cameron and the European Council President have...
Thanks, Moira, and welcome everyone to Your World once again on this, the first day of a brand new month, Monday the 1st of Feb. But from now on, a world that is Wogan-less. Following the sad and for many of us totally unexpected news that Sir Terry passed away in the early hours of yesterday morning, surrounded by those nearest and dearest to his heart. And what a heart and what a man, a giant of entertainment broadcasting, truly. There have been and will be few like him. One of the all-time greats, right up there with the big guns, BBC Hall of Famers. He was Radio's Eric Morecambe, Ronnie Barker. He was our Captain Mannering, our Basil Fawlty. But he made us laugh every day for 2 hours and for over 30 years. All unscripted, all ad-lib, always supremely assured, unwaveringly confident. And you know why? Because he never took any of this seriously, least of all himself. He was the butt of most of his jokes. Laugh and the world laughs with you, sure. But Terry knew that if you go on better and laugh at yourself, then you're really onto something. And actually, the world won't be Wogan-less for a little bit longer, because today, the Radio 2 Breakfast Show, the show Terry put on the map and making it a dream job for us to follow in his footsteps, will be Wogan-heavy. And I, for one, can't wait.
Good morning, Joe.
February the 1st, Monday morning. We're here till 9:30, along with Sir Terry. Look at these front pages, they are unbelievable. The Daily Mail, front page. The Times, front page. The Independent, all of the newspapers today on the front pages, and for pages and pages inside, paying huge tribute to Sir Terry Wogan. Thank you, Terry, for making us feel the world was a cheerier place. Farewell, Sir Terry, a true national treasure. Radio silence. The broadcaster Terry Wogan, whose velvety brogue and gentle wit won him generations of fans. How true that is, died yesterday. Wogan's secret battle and wife who nursed him to the end on the front page of the Mail there. There he is with Lady Helen, gorgeous Lady Helen, the front page of the Sun and the Mirror. They share the same headline and they are saying thank you for being our friend, which is of course a reflection of exactly what Sir Terry said as he signed off for his final breakfast show in 2009. He said to the listeners, to you guys, to all of us, thank you for being my friend. Look at this on the front page of the Telegraph. Huge picture of Sir Terry. I mean, and a gorgeous picture of Sir Terry. In a sky blue shirt, eyes wide open, quizzical look on his face. If the Queen, who was among his devoted listeners, is the nation's centre of gravity, then Terry Wogan was its centre of levity. What do you think of that, Tel? The best laugh in the world, isn't he? Your thoughts for Sir Terry all morning this morning on the text 88291. Hold on, we just have to hold on. We don't have to survive. So this party in heaven just got a lot more appealing with Sir Terry up there to run the show, says Dee in Tunbridge. R.I.P. Sir Terry. Good morning, Chris. So very sad the world has lost such a special man. All he did for charity in such a kind manner. We'll never forget the Janet and John tales. We'll have some later. Don't you worry about that. From Aid and Joe, Chris, tears of joy for the man he was, tears of sadness, he is gone. Goodbye, my friend. And thank you for being there. From Jane, lots of these coming in. Keep them coming all morning. If you look inside the Sun today, there are 8 pages on Sir Terry. Terry's all gold, reflecting on some of his moments on TV and on the radio. Nicolas Cage going wild on one of his shows. Jenna Lumley's TV strip show for children, indeed. Terry biting, chomping on his fist as Joanna strips off. I don't quite know why he's chomping on his fist. That could be for several reasons, don't you think? Floral Dance, Top of the Pops, number one. Will we ever forgive him for that? That's the big question. Iron Lady's Power Show, after a 1990 interview with PM Margaret Thatcher, he saw the Iron Lady's true power. She had been seen hubby Dennis in hospitality knocking back G&T's. Terry told how she barked across the room. That's your second, Dennis. We must be off now. And then huge tributes all about Children Lead. Esther Anson talking about when she worked with him. She presented the first ever Children Lead with Sir Terry. This is just lovely stuff to read and so many fantastic photographs. All in the papers today. Sir Terry of Taplow. Well, here's Lynn. Morning, Lynn.
Morning, Chris.
So he's one of your best pals on the radio, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he was. Yes. And yeah, I'm going to go already. You do it to me. You make me do this.
I'm sorry. That's what it's called for this morning.
I was all right yesterday. Now you're looking at me.
Well, stand by, because this is nothing compared to what's coming up later. So do you remember your first ever shift with Sir Terry?
I think I was too drunk to remember it. No, let's see.
And you've been that way
yeah,
ever since.
Yeah, I've been that way. So, you know what? Someone asked me that yesterday, and I had to say, no, not really, because he was so kind and so charming. It was as though I had been working with him for years, and it didn't feel like anything special. I was just like the girl who was going to do the travel. And he was so lovely to me, so kind, so generous. You know, kindness is one of those things that is much underrated, but it's very, very rare. And he had it. And if you find someone with kindness, hang on to them.
Yep. Terry made our morning so much brighter. He made our very own Wheelstone Bollards famous. Remember those? The Wheelstone Bollards?
Who knows?
With love from Ludacris and Anorak.
Ludacris.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Was brought up on Wake Up to Wogan. You have me in tears already and I'm at work. Not a good look, says Jill from Warrington. Well, Jill, you better get used to it because we're here till 9:30 and we're going all the way with this tribute to Sir Terry. Oh, Christoph, thank you so much for giving us this last Wake Up to Wogan show. Our missus laughs so much, says Nikki in Stirling. Well, you don't have to, because we have it here. That's the magic of radio. Because when he went, he really went.
I think that's the one with Boggy Marsh, isn't it?
I think you're right.
And it was talking about... I set them off because he had... Boggy had to read something out that I'd written for him about a place in Scotland called Bigger.
Right.
And that he went. He got down. Or it might have been a Janet and John story alternative.
But when Terry went, you couldn't get him back.
No.
That was it, really?
We just had to wait for it naturally. It's like a weather event. You just have to wait for it to finish.
Lovely stuff, Lynn. Morning, Christoph. For years, I woke up to Wogan. Terry with his team made you feel it was just you they were broadcasting to. Well, that was... I mean, they do say that, you know. When you're teaching people to be on the radio, they do say, imagine talking to just one person, but it's so difficult to do. And he was the absolute governor at it. He will always be the governor of entertainment radio, as far as I'm concerned. As far as we're all concerned here, Jeremy Vine's in the paper today. There are pages and pages. There are forests of paper dedicated to Terry Wogan today. Quite rightly,
absolutely
too. But unbelievable. I mean, you know, there's articles by basically everybody you've ever heard of that works in this silly business. A week or show. The day he put me in my place and proved his genius by Jeremy Vine. Can't wait to read that. Page 7 of the Mail. So Vassas is here. Let's get away from Terry on the front pages and in the middle of the papers. Let's go to the back pages. Surely he doesn't get a mention there, does he?
Well, actually, do you know what? There is a Terry all over the back pages this morning.
Oh, and you see?
Another institution, really. And do you know what? I wonder if some Chelsea fans feel the way that we feel about Sir Terry, about John Terry, who apparently is leaving Chelsea at the end of the season. Chelsea...
This is BBC Radio 2 online and on digital radio. And 88 to 91 FM.
It's 7 o'clock. Here's Moira.
BBC News at 7 o'clock on Monday, the 1st of February. Good morning. Books of condolence for Sir Terry Wogan, who died yesterday, will open this morning in his hometown of Limerick.
Sir Terry Wogan, his velvety Tom, his genius and his family who he treasured above all else. Let's go over to Terry for News Just In.
I was pleased to read in the papers that you now have 7.9 listeners per week. Congratulations, that's nearly four times the number I thought.
Oh, what a beautiful morning.
Wogan less, not till 9:30, that's for sure. And beyond if I know Ken. And I do know Ken. I actually do know Ken. But unfortunately for him, he knows you. Jojo Gunn and Run, Run, Run. 7:10, Monday morning. Your thoughts on Soteri, your memories of Soteri. How much those are messing up your mascara this morning on the text 88291. Email us chris.evans@bbc.co.uk. Just as well, I've not got mascara on this morning, Chris. I expect the whole show will be one massive mascara nightmare. I grew up giggling with Terry, as did my own kids. Heaven just got a whole lot funnier, says Nikki. Chris, I was in floods yesterday, listening to all the tributes to for Terry, trying to put my makeup on now for work as a school teacher. But having to start again and again and again. Sorry, Lisa. Karen says, morning, Chris. Not going to bother with the mascara this morning. Terry was the voice of my youth. I miss him so much already. Don't we all? But he's going to be with us this morning, I promise. Here's Terry Breaks now on Radio 2. Sir Terry, please.
Have a pencil and paper handy.
If only. Good morning, Chris. I met Sir Terry when he was taking part in a charity golf tournament on the Isle of Man. I was a receptionist at the hotel that he was staying at. What struck me, and has always stayed with me, is how he made sure to thank everyone. Even the people behind the scenes weren't exempt. He truly made you feel appreciated. What a lovely man, says Karen from Warrington. Karen, that's spot on. That is exactly what he was like all the time to everyone. The more insignificant to most people a person was, the more significant they became to Sir Terry. On this day, the 1st of Feb comes to us this morning, courtesy of a marvellous magician who's conjuring up a spectacle across the UK. 7:22 this morning, we're remembering Sir Terry Wogan, who passed away yesterday. Chris, on countless dark and dreary mornings, Terry brought numerous smiles to my face and lifted my heart, ready to face the day. And that is a priceless gift for which I will always remember him and thank him for, says Nick in Sheffield. Chris, tears running down my cheeks. That's such sad news yesterday. May a truly wholesome and wonderful man rest in peace. Thank you, Terry, for the laughter and joy you brought into our lives over many years.
I hear your traffic temptress say that Ken Bruce was always over her and that Barrowlands is always touching her for a fiver. That sounds like fun, says Beekeeper. Would you mind asking her, when can I pop in for a tenner's worth? How cheap do these people think you are?
You were his wingwoman for how many years, Lynn?
I think I was on it about 4 or 5 years, maybe.
It seems longer, and I don't mean that.
No, because I was behind the scenes for about 5 years as well. Being a member of his team was just marvellous. The thing is, all of the audience was a member of the team. But I was very much the junior member, because the other people were a little bit older than me, tiny little bit. But even though I was really, really junior, it didn't matter. I was a full member of the team and we were into everything. And you were saying about how did you feel when you first started working with him? I was kind of slipped on air. And because he didn't make a big deal, I was just a member of the team. It wasn't until about 2 or 3 years, literally 2 or 3 years later, I was sitting exactly where I am now. Beautiful day. And I looked out the window. Beautiful day. And it said, oh my goodness, I'm sitting in a room with Terry Wogan. He's about to open the fader. I'm about to talk to Sir Terry Wogan. It took me literally years to cotton on. He was fabulous.
So you put your nerves on hold,
yes,
didn't you?
I just like, ooh.
And after nearly 3 years, you thought it was all right to realise who you were in. Because before that, you'd have been a bag of bits,
yeah,
wouldn't you,
really?
Yeah,
I could have done it.
Okay, here's a great story from Jeremy Vine. This is in the paper today. The day he put me in my place and proved his genius, by Jeremy Vine. A tube strike once prompted me to run into work. On went the barely used tracksuit bottoms and a faded T-shirt. Shattered by the end, I just about made the 6 miles from my home in West London across Hyde Park to the Radio 2 building at Oxford Circus. Out of breath and bathed in sweat, I stumbled into BBC reception. To my embarrassment, as I waited for the lift, another figure joined me, Sir Terry Wogan, on his way to present The Breakfast Show, wearing a perfectly pressed cream linen suit. The two of us got into the cramped elevator. Me sweaty, him cool as a cucumber, carrying his leather briefcase. Terry was going to his 6th floor studio, and I was about to press the lift button for the 2nd floor when I looked at my watch. Good grief, Terry, I said. It's 28 minutes past. You're on the air in 2 minutes, he replied. Yes, I'm early this morning. Concerned that stopping for my floor might make him late, I said we should go straight to the sixth so he can get out to the lift first. Fine by me, he said cheerfully in that famous baritone. He exited at the sixth and I went down to my office and turned on the radio. The news ended, the jingle played, and the voice we all knew so well said, "Hello, it's Terry Wogan." And then he told his listeners, "You know, one of the great things about a tube strike is that you get to meet your colleagues in the strangest places. So in the lift this morning, there was Jeremy Vine, just finished a 6-mile run from Hammersmith. And believe me," here he paused, as if inhaling deeply, "you could tell."
Yes, that's Terry. Don't take anything too seriously. Preston, Jackknife, Laurie on the...
Ford Thomas, push for the stride. Dear Chris, just lovely to hear his master's voice this morning again on the radio. And how true that is. What a voice. There was something about his voice that lets you knew everything was going to be okay, says Jane in Salisbury. Monica's had the pleasure of being interviewed whilst dressed as Fred Flintstone for Children Need Bite, Terry, says Michelle in Ramsgate in Kent. I wasn't quite sure where to put the microphone. Chris Terry joined me on my drive to work for 8 years and I always arrived with a smile on my face. He was a genuinely lovely man who made what he did seem effortless. Samantha from Featherstone. Samantha, tell me about it. Good morning, Moira.
Dearest.
So you knew Terry well. You're not dissimilar in your own national treasure status, I have to say, Moira.
No. But this man, this broadcasting giant, he was so warm and so delicious and extremely dangerous.
Tell me about that last comment. is that to be on the air with, you mean?
Absolutely. 2,000 years ago, in about 1980, mm-hmm. I hosted a through-the-night show called You and the Night and the Music, so I'd sort of warm Terry's seat for him because he would follow Ray Moore's early morning show. And he kept me, first of all, in stitches because he was just so, so warm and so, so funny. But, you know, we as I say, I started bumping into him and getting together with him way back when. But then 2,000 years later, in I think it was about 2008, we were at a fascinating awards lunch. And he introduced me as Teleprompter Totty, and I have never got over
it. See, but he could get away with it because we all loved him so much. He was a terror. I mean, some of the stuff he did on the radio, you know, if anybody
else
they'd be barred for life.
No way. Absolutely.
People are talking about Janet and John. They talked about Janet and John yesterday, and some people listening to this show may not be aware of what that is. We're going to play some Janet and John later, and he'll get away with it again. Of course he will. But he thought the world was a bit silly, didn't he? I mean, that was his mantra. That's why he didn't take himself...
And yet, I mean, there was such, along with the humour, there was such a depth and a warmth. And I mean, for him to be able to make anybody and everybody feel yay, no matter how rough and tough, it is, hey, there's still light at the end of, and keep on doing it.
I know, and his voice was so reassuring. I think that was it. He sort of said so much just by the resonance in his voice, you know.
Particularly at the Eurovision Song Contest, I think.
Oh, well, we'll get on to that later as well. But we kept, you know, so Terry, if you're listening, you're probably not, don't blame you, but if you are, there is confirmation of your world still being silly. Here we go. Just some of the headlines in the paper today. Findus brand is finished, but pancakes are here to stay. Models have to sign contracts promising to eat. Your perfume always smells like you. See, he was right. We live in a mad and crazy world. None of it means much, but give us today's golden oldie, which might mean something to someone.
It's chosen by Gillian Reed from Neatshead in Norfolk. She says, "When I was a child, my dad bought me a record player that was red with a white lid, and I absolutely loved it. The only problem was I had no records of my own, so I went through his old 78s and found this song. I played it over and over again until he took me to the music shop the following weekend to buy me my first 45. The track that takes Gillian back is Perry Como with Hot Diggity.
Thank you, Maura, for that, and your lovely memories of Sattel.
Oh, hot diggity, dog diggity, boom, what you do to me?
Thanks for your friendships, says Eamon Holmes. And Eamon Holmes citing Terry as his broadcasting hero. I think we'd all go along with that. Definitely in entertainment radio, he was. He will always be the governor. He was an extraordinary man, always full of joy. Lorraine Chase, Zoe Ball, master of the radio waves, a true gent. Simon Mayer, always the right tone, always the right phrase. That's so true. And he always used to leave a pause. And you always thought, oh, not this time. He's not going to get there this time. And he did. And I always wanted to know, and I never asked him. You know, were you hanging on for the right words there, or did you always have them and you were just ready waiting to fire them at the perfect time. I'd love to know that. Did Wogan's radio priest give him pause for thought on his deathbed? And that's talking about Father Brian Darcy, who visited Terry on Thursday, lifelong friend before Terry even came to Britain as a younger broadcaster over in Ireland. And Father Brian will be on this show in half an hour, live from Enniskillen. The front page of the Telegraph: if the Queen, who was among his devoted listeners, is the nation's centre of gravity, then Terry Wogan was its centre of levity. One step into his innocent, affable world and you always felt better, writes Alison Pearson. On Eurovision, some quotes here on a Croatian entry. He said, oh, it's much more fun to sing along to than listen to. His opening to the show in Finland in 2007 was this. Who knows what hellish future lies ahead? Actually, I do. I've seen the rehearsals. And describing the compares of the 2001 contest in Denmark, he said, oh, my word. It's Dr. Death and the Tooth Fairy. From Madonna to Her Maj, what a wonderful life Sir Terry enjoyed. Thank you for being our friend, and that's reflecting his words on his last breakfast show when he said to you, the listeners, thank you for being my friend. That's on the front page of the Mirror and the Sun. More Sir Terry to come, and we will be having some Janet and John after Eva Cassidy over the rainbow. If you've never heard Terry's Janet and John and you're driving, you may want to pull over.
On a recent visit to the Outlaws, the mother-in-law asked, as we were seated, you were sat where at the dining table, she said, does this taste burnt to you? Is there a safe answer to this question? I had to fake a choking attack to divert away from an answer, but I'd like to be prepared next time. You're only an Aegis, Tim, look. The only answer to does this taste burnt to you by your mother-in-law, in the same way as the only answer to does my bum look big in this, is no.
Advice for life every day as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So funny. And, you know, when you hear Terry that relaxed on the radio, did you work with him day in, day out? Was he aware all the time that he was actually on the radio? Or did he care that he was on the radio?
I don't think it mattered. I took from him not to take anything seriously. I will take nothing seriously as a result of working with him. And we were just talking on the radio, just talking rubbish.
But brilliant rubbish.
Brilliant rubbish.
And it was his giggle, because the thing is, you know, I mean, I produced Terry on TV shows and things like that. And, you know,
I doubt that highly, frankly.
Exactly. That's my
think
point.
You got near to producing him.
And you think, I'm not sure about this, you know, because he could be a nightmare. Because
good, I'm glad to hear it.
The thing is, what people don't realise or may not realise about him is that he was like that all the time. He just laughed at everything. So we'd be in a production meeting. We'd have a 21-page autocue script.
Hang on. You managed to get him into a meeting?
Well, we didn't tell him it was a meeting. We sat him down with a cup of tea and a bicky, and then we surrounded him, hoping he wouldn't notice it was actually a meeting. Because you know, if he'd have been out the door
like
a shot, wouldn't he?
No chance.
But he just giggled all the time, and he had time. Didn't he? That's the thing. He had time for life.
And also he had a really brilliant brain. He could, you know, as you say, he had those pauses. He wasn't afraid of pauses or silences, because he knew that we were all laughing and anyone listening would be laughing.
And one way to make people to listen to the radio is to go quiet, because that's rarely what it does. And as it goes quiet, you sort of lean in. You think, oh, what's going on here? And he was just, I mean, the thing you say about his intelligence, you know, he was too intelligent to be a disc jockey.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, this is the vocation of simpletons, and we, most of us are, and because he was
absolutely
much cleverer than you know, people in other more sort of honourable, respectable walks of life, he made the rest of us seem even more stupid than we already are.
And we didn't really need any help.
No. And see, because he wasn't really a disc jockey, was he? He was something before that, because, you know, Radio 1 came on the air in 67 with Tony Blackburn and the other guys, and that was all fantastic. But Terry was he was 4 or 5 years just before that, which gave him a distance and a point of view to just look at the whole thing. You're all really stupid. But I'll join in your game for a while.
Yes, if you want me to.
And he joined in for almost 50 years. I think he was on the Breakfast Show for 37 years.
38 years.
OK, we have some Janet and John. Okay. It's coming up after this. Lynn will set the context for what that was in case you're not aware of it, after some travel and some sport. Basil.
First, another terrier, a footballing rather than a broadcasting.
With more traffic in about half an hour.
One dreams about a mechanic called Lynn and wiping the oil from her skin. I know she's a bit feisty, but when all greased up nicely, big ends can be handled by Lynn. Paul, for goodness sake, calm yourself.
Calm yourself. So that was another one of those poems from his army of scriptwriters.
The scriptwriters that we had listening were magnificent.
All right, now, you know, he was excellent with the written word. He was excellent with his ad-libs. The best in the business, the best there will ever be, because the breeding ground for people like Terry just isn't there anymore. Tell us about Janet and John, then.
OK, Janet and John, this all comes from Boggy Marsh, John Marsh, who was one of our newsreaders. His name is John. His wife's name was Janet. So, Mick Sturbs, who was one of our listeners. Now, he came up with this idea of writing Janet and John stories. Everybody knows about Janet and John stories. And the whole idea was that John would get into scrapes and he would try and... He was very simple kind of bloke, very kind, and Janet would go around with him and they'd try and sort things out. But it never turned out quite as we were expecting. I have to say, everything that is written is completely innocent. Completely innocent to the pure. All things pure.
Okay. Rewind. John goes to the park. Today, John is going to the park. John likes going to the park. John can take his scooter to the park.
Ooh.
John likes playing with his scooter. John puts on his play clothes, bright orange dungarees, a pink corduroy cap, a bright blue jumper with stars on it, and some shiny black shoes. Janet says, "Don't be late for lunch today. I'm making waffles."
"I won't,"
says John. See John scoot down the road, how fast he can go. When John reaches the shops at the bottom of the road, he runs over a piece of wood on the path and falls off his scooter. See John blub. Mrs. Parks from the shoe repair shop, it's one of those mornings, comes out to see what all the fuss is about. Mrs. Parks picks John up, dusts him down, dries the tears from his beard. Mrs. Parks says, "Come into the shop and sit down for a while, kind Mrs. Parks." Mrs. Parks pulls a piece of wood out of the wheel of the scooter. John sees that he has scuffed the toe of one of his lovely black shoes. See him blub again. There, says Mrs. Parks. We can have that sorted in no time. John says, "Whose stomach was that?"
Yours!
No.
It's the cupcakes. The revenge of the cupcake. John says, "Throw them away." This it shouldn't happen.
It hasn't happened yet. No,
never
will.
Going.
Oh, heaven's sake. John give them a cupcake.
Why is this making me laugh? "Those are my 37th best shoes," Mrs. Park says. "They're very well made."
"Yes," says John. "I get them from a special shoe shop in London and take them back when they need to be repaired. But they don't need it very often because they don't get much work."
Mrs. Park says, "They do a very nice job. But I think we can fix this damage for you. They're very nice shoes and it's nice to meet someone who doesn't mind paying for quality." See Mrs. Parks rub some cream into the scuff mark on John's shoe, then give it a really good polish. In a few moments, the shoe is as good as new. "Clever, Mrs. Parks." John says,
"How much do I owe you?"
See John looking nervously at his purse. Mrs. Parks says, "No charge at all. Just remember us when you want some shoes repaired."
"I will,"
says John, and scoots off to the park. Soon it's time for lunch. When John arrives home, Janet is just about to serve his food, and Janet says, "Did you have a nice time in the park?"
"Yes, I did," says John. "On the way, I fell off my scooter, and Mrs. Park saw me, took me into a shop to sort me out. She got the wood out and saw that I had a nasty scuff. So she got on her knees, rubbed some cream in it, and worked her fists up and down until I could see my face in it. She said it was a pleasure to find a man who wasn't afraid to splash out on a decent pair. And she was..." "And she was surprised that my old cobblers didn't get more..." work, and they've done very well. I can't go on. Along with the stomach rumbling and
yeah. Oh, dear me. It was a laugh what did it, wasn't it?
I'll tell you what the trick was. Terry never read them before he read them on air.
Right.
So it was all news to him.
Coming to him first.
It all came to him first. He didn't realise. He hadn't seen it before.
All right, Jen and John. They've got to bring those out again, haven't they?
Yes, they managed to raise millions for children in need of those.
I say reprint immediately. Reprint, republish.
Here we go on BBC Radio 2, online and on digital radio, 88 to 91 FM.
Here's Moira.
BBC News at 8 o'clock on Monday, the 1st of February. Good morning. Books of condolence for Sir Terry Wogan, who died yesterday, will open this morning in his home city of Limerick. Sir Terry had a regular afternoon slot on Radio 1. Annie Nightingale presented the show after Sir Terry's.
He made me laugh so much. When he handed over to me, this is my very, very early days, my first shows almost ever at Radio 1 in the afternoons, and he used to hand over to me and say something that would make me laugh to such an extent I couldn't speak.
Noel Edmonds also worked with Sir Terry at Radio 1. He said the Irishman made broadcasting seem very simple.
He was the master, the absolute master for me. If you can combine the relaxation, the genial ability just to appear to be yourself, but you're actually working like mad beneath the surface. That is mastering your craft.
Superstarring Sir Terry Wogan.
I am your other listener. Steady, Linda. Steady. That's a claim not many would make. I fell for your voice many years ago. Drifting into my room, I imagined a tall, manly Adonis. And then I saw you on television. And that's when the headache started.
Shake, 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 Sinora. 8:10, Monday morning. Chris, we took the Janet and John CD into hospital to listen to when having our second son. Had to stop listening as we were laughing too much and I couldn't breathe properly, says Ali in Norwich. Yes. Dear Chris, laughing my head off listening to Janet and John again. Thank you to Terry from Francis from Norwich and his team as well. Terry and his team. Always about the team. Fabulous to hear Terry doing Janet and John again. The Times almost crashed the car for laughing. Thanks for a great start to a very grey morning, says Dean in Liverpool. Janet and John, thanks for making me cry with laughter again, Sir Terry, says Sharon in Braintree. Chris, I can't breathe for laughing at Janet and John. We needed a good laugh today. Excellent, says Susan. Susan, you're very welcome. Terry Wogan is the only person, says Nigel in Fleet in Hampshire, who has been a passenger in every car I've owned. A great man. I was stuck in traffic on the M1 Junction 29 and I'm just not bothered about being late. I don't want to miss any of this morning's tributes to Sir Terry from Mac. So sad to hear the news of Terry's passing yesterday. When I listened to him in the mornings, he made you feel that everything was okay with the world. God bless you, Terry, from Charlie in Wrexham. Christoph, good to hear you celebrating Sir Terry and his memory in the manner in which he would have wanted. Well, absolutely. And we're okay now here. The team, myself, we're okay now, but I've got to be honest, we did have a wobble for the first half hour of the show. This is how we kicked off at 6:30 this morning. Thanks, Moira, and welcome everyone to Your World once again on this, the first day. And coming next, we have Father Brian Darcy, Terry's friend for over 50 years, live on the line from Enniskillen. You gotta help me. Right now, Father Brian Darcy will be on the air in just over an hour from now with his Porsche Thought, but he's here just 1 hour or so ahead of that to talk about his great friend, Terry Wogan. Good morning, Father Brian.
Good morning, Chris, and thank you for a lovely, lovely programme.
Well, you're more than welcome, and it's more than deserved as far as Terry's concerned. I heard you on the radio yesterday. You touched upon you knowing Terry before he came over to England to start this amazing career, which is on the front page of all the papers today, and inside for pages and pages, forests of paper being used up this morning in his memory. Can you tell us about Terry, you know, pre the BBC over here in England?
Yeah, we thought he was mad going to the BBC, actually, because he had a safe job in Ireland at the time, and he was a big star. He was head of presentation. Actually, can you imagine Terry Wogan reading the news? That's what he actually did that right. for a while. And he taught other presenters, great people like Gayburn and Larry Gogan and Brendan Balfe and Mike Murphy, all of them big names in Ireland, some of them also big names in England. And he taught them the art of presentation. And he was the head of presentation in RTE in a kind of a dungeon place down on O'Connell Street, where RTE used to be in the post office. And many a day I was in there broadcasting. And one of the times he had taught Brendan Balfe how to present, you see. And he was overseeing this presentation, the first day of Brendan's presentation. And Brendan got real serious. And all of a sudden he found water coming over his head. Terry had got behind him, it was radio. Terry had got behind him and poured a jug of water over his head whilst he, for the first time, was opening the station in RTE. And he said, "We have to have our little initial rituals, you know, my boy."
And that was and live on the air, was it?
It was live on the air. Another occasion, Mike Murphy was reading the news he smelled something funny. And Terry had sneaked down under the desk and set the light alight, the news that he was reading, the sheet, the A4 sheet that he was reading. So halfway through it, he ran out of news because it was on fire.
The news is literally on fire. This is hot news, this
is. It is definitely hot news, you know.
So it all begins to make sense now. I didn't realise he actually taught broadcasting. See, when he got over here, by the time he came over here, he could do what they call his teaching from behind. He just did it sort of tacitly, didn't he, in the end?
That's right. And to be quite honest, RTE was too stiff for him. It was a state-run broadcasting organisation. And he was lucky, I suppose, when he went to the BBC, it was after the Pirates sort of station and everything. Radio 1 was his first broadcast in RTE, in BBC. That's where he started. And it was, of course, a whole new world out there. And this man with the gift of the blarney, he always said that the greatest gift he had was the accent, because to the people of Britain, he was accentless, and therefore he couldn't be put into a sort of a category. Is he upper class, lower class, middle class, or is he whatever? He thought that his Irish accent was a great benefit to him. But as you know, and I know, Chris, the great benefit he had was two things: a brilliant mind and an incredible voice.
Yeah, incredible voice, a beautiful intonation, and time. See, the thing I was talking to Lynn about time, he had time on the air. He was never in a rush. He was never worried about things being done. They would always be done in the end, some way, somehow. But he was like that off the air, because I know that when you finish your pause for thoughts, there was no rushing off, you going one way and him going the other. It was out for a cup of coffee with his producer. Again, he just found time for life because he realised that life was so precious.
Yes, he did. That was, you're absolutely right there. And he loved conversation. I mean, he loved people who could speak to him. And he also was a fantastic speaker, as you know, but he was also a brilliant listener. And I know I remember being with him one day, Chris, going when he was doing the program for you on television in the morning program that, and I was over doing Pause for Thought, and he brought me in the car and I sat with him or behind and looked the scenes that day. That was the first time I ever saw you. Too afraid to speak to you, of course, and never did. But that was magnificent, because, you know, I could see you were trying to tell Terry what to do on that day, and other producers were too. And Terry was saying, yes, yes. And then he went and did it exactly the way he was going
to do
it in the first place anyway, you know. But the one thing that people may not know, he was a voracious reader, an absolute voracious reader. And the extraordinary thing, I was speaking to Mark on Thursday, his son Mark, and we were remembering this. He could actually quote from a book he had read 20 years ago. He had a phenomenal memory. Often, for example, I did a lot of my studies through Latin. He learned Latin with the Jesuits in Belvedere College in Dublin. And one of the things was he could remember absolutely the Latin phrases, tags, and they would come out in the middle of a conversation. Anyone else it would sound pompous, but for him it just was another little way of saying something different in a different way. He was incredible like that.
That was it. He had a brain the size of an elephant. And you went to see him on Thursday, and you said on the radio yesterday you went to say goodbye. Go into that as far as you want to, and as far as you think is right and proper, please, if you don't mind.
Well, that, so nice of you to say it and put it that way, Chris, because you know, there's nothing as sacred as a man's last few days or a person's last few days, and I'm certainly not going to violate that in any way for Terry or the family or any other way. I had been in constant touch with him, and you know, I thought things were going to be all right. You know, I was a bit worried when he didn't turn up for or wasn't able to turn up for Children in Need, which was his great passion and great love for 25 years. And I phoned Helen and phoned him, and he said, "No, everything's going to be all right, old boy, and you better say a few prayers if you have any influence up there, if there's anyone up there," you know, the way he used to go on with this atheism. And so that was all the way it was. Then after Christmas, it began to change a little bit. It seemed more serious. And the first opportunity that I was able to get, I said to Helen, "I'll be over," and I was just too busy to get over. And I went over last Thursday, and I am never as glad that I did everything. I just dropped everything and went over, as he had often done for me over the years. You know, I wasn't sure if it was goodbye, but as soon as I saw Terry, I knew it was the last time I was going to see him. And the shake hands was the last shake hands I would ever have with him. And so it was a beautiful day, a day I'll never forget, a sad day, because it was the end of an incredible friendship.
Thank you, Brian. Father Brian going to join us again in 1 hour from now. Randy Crawford, One Day I'll Fly Away, and before that, the brilliant Father Brian Darcy. And Father Brian will be back in 1 hour with today's Pause for Thought. So, what did you learn from Terry, Lynn, about broadcasting?
Mainly, for heaven's sake, this is not important. None of this is important. We're just larking about. My mother would say, if she was still alive, that I act the goat for a living. That's what I do. And I do a bit of traffic as well. None of this is important. Do not worry. It's just not serious. We're just here to lark about. And hopefully, and I think Terry felt this, if he was having a good time, he was making us laugh, because you couldn't be in his presence and not laugh. If he was making us laugh, hopefully the audience, both of them, were having a good time as well. You know, and that's, he was just a good, he was an immensely generous broadcaster, which, as you know, in this business is occasionally surprisingly rare.
Terry Wogan. This is BBC Radio 2, online and on digital radio, 88 to 91 FM.
Here's more, it's 8:30.
BBC News, books of condolence are being opened today in Sir Terry Wogan's home city of Limerick and online following his death yesterday. The paper's front pages are dominated by pictures of Sir Terry as tributes continue to pour in.
One slice of wisdom here about doing what we do for a living is printed on page 7 of the Mail. And this is what he said about being on the radio and being on the telly and presenting in front of the microphone or the camera. He said, "Get on your toes. Keep your wits about you. Say goodnight politely when it's over. Go home and enjoy your dinner."
Very
brilliant,
nice.
Brilliant advice, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he said, when we were in 1996... when I was doing the Radio 1 breakfast show, for the minute that I did it, and he was on Radio 2, he phoned me up and he said, you know, he said, we're responsible for waking up almost half the country every morning. I said, I know, it's incredible, isn't it? He said, well, I think we need to talk about that. And so I said, well, what do you think? He said, well, why don't we have a game of golf? He said, you come round to my house and pick me up and we'll go and have a game of golf. And so I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's like a dream come true. Playing golf with Terry Wogan, the guy who still holds the record for the longest ever televised putt,
yeah,
which was on Pro Celebrity Golf, wasn't it?
100 feet.
I know.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, was his proudest achievement in broadcasting, other than Children in Need. Yeah. I mean, that's actually all he cared about. And so I finished my show and he finished his show. We both drove to his house. And, you know, I'm just grinning like a Cheshire cat. I can't believe it. And so I pull up to his house, and it's exactly what you want Terry Wogan's house to look like. I won't go any further than that, but I was not disappointed. It just looked like, because it's so seldom that happens, you know. And you think, oh, no, he lives in a house like I would want him to live in. It's Terry Towers, you know, there's big gates and you crunch in on the gravel drive, and then he opens the door, big smiley face, welcoming you, hosting you to his house. And for me, you know, and I used to listen to Terry when I used to collect trolleys at Presto Supermarket in Birchwood in Warrington. And there was Radio 1 on the breakfast show, and that was very good. But I, even at the age of 17, 18 years old, I always listened to Terry on Radio 2 in my Blaze Colored Mini, my VJA 879K Mini on medium wave. And I just thought he was hilarious. He was much older than me, didn't have much in common with him, but I just thought he was fantastic. And that was years and years ago. So here I am now on the steps of his house, and he invites me in, and I'm thinking, all right, well, obviously I've got to play well today. I don't want to let him down. And then he invites me in, and I said, so where are we playing golf? He said, oh, golf can wait. He said, let's have a bit of lunch first. And so I said, oh, okay, then, all right, then. So immediately he's got time again. And this is what I'm saying about it. It's always about, let's make time. Let's remember to smell the roses. The golf will come. The night will come. The night will fall, and the sun will rise again, hopefully. And so I said, okay, all right, what are we having for lunch? She said, oh, no, before, let's have a drink. And this was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And so he invited me out onto the patio, which again looks exactly like you want it to look, and the lawn and everything else that goes on there. And we had a glass of pink champagne at 11 o'clock in the morning. Now, I've never, ever played golf after having a drink. I just don't see the point. It's not something that's I mean, I'm happy to have a drink, and I'm happy to play golf, and I'm happy to have a drink after golf, but not before. But obviously I wasn't going to say anything. And so then we had a glass of champagne. It was, you know, like I say, it was early in the morning. So it went pretty much to my head, I have to say. And I was buzzing anyway, and adrenaline and alcohol don't mix, really. Well, they do mix. That's the problem. And then we had another glass and another glass. And, we were well into a bottle within half an hour. I mean, I can't play golf now. I can't play. What's for lunch? You know, is there going to be... Anyway, lunch was... Lady Helen had made lunch, but she had a bridge afternoon, right? So she'd pre-made lunch, and it was all wrapped and covered in cellophane. So Terry and I sat in his conservatory and had lunch and had... Then some white wine first, then some red wine.
Nice.
And by the time lunch was over, I completely forgotten that golf was a game. And so we got a lift to the golf course because we were going to still play golf. And I'm thinking, I can't do this. I think we got to the golf course at about 3 o'clock.
Uh-oh.
And we sort of hacked our way around. I can't really remember much about the game. And we got to the 11th hole. And Terry said, I think we need to finish on the next hole. I said, yeah, because it's going dark. He says, no, because we've got dinner booked at 7. And he'd booked us a restaurant, an Italian restaurant at 7 o'clock in, I think it was Gerrard's Cross. Now, bearing in mind, we're both on the radio the next day, waking up half the country, as he said before. And so we sit down. Lady Helen then joins us for dinner and a couple of other people. And they're fresh. So they start afresh. So there's fresh blood, fresh energy there. And so we sit down and we start again. And we crack on. And it gets to about 10:30. I now can't remember my name, let alone pronounce it. And it gets to about 10:45. I said, Terry, I think we should go home. I think we need to go home now. He says, Sam, why? Why ever would you think that? I said, because we've got to get up in the morning to our radio shows. He said, sure, that'll be all right, you know. We've been doing it a while now, you know. I said, yeah, but... He said, what time are you going to be up then? And I think I was on at 6:30. I said, well, about 4:30. Why ever would you be getting up that early? I said, well, you've got to prepare. He said, Chris, he said, they either like you or they don't. Right, Bassos, today's top 10 news, please.
You know what? It's been really lovely to hear you and Lynn talk about Terry more than ever before this morning, and hearing from him this morning more than ever. I wish I'd met him. But so, we were obviously going to do Sir Terry Wogan as top 10 news this morning. But then with the papers full of Terry and the airways full of Terry Wogan, we sort of got to wondering how all the other Terry Wogans must be feeling and must have been feeling over the past 50 years or so. So how about, and I wonder if Terry might have liked this, how about your tenuous links to the fame of other?
What do you think, Tom?
And here we go on BBC Radio 2, online and on digital radio, 88 to 91 FM.
It's just got 9.
BBC News, books of condolence for Sir Terry Wogan are opening this morning in his home city of Limerick and on the city's official website. Sir Terry died of cancer yesterday. He was 77. Father Brian Darcy appeared regularly on his show, and this morning he told us about his last meeting with Sir Terry on Thursday.
I wasn't sure if it was goodbye, but as soon as I saw Terry, I knew it was the last time I was going to see him. And the shake hands was the last shake hands I would ever have with him. So it was a beautiful day, a day I'll never forget, a sad day, because it was the end of an incredible friendship.
Father Brian Darcy.
I was pleased to read in the papers that you now have 7.9 listeners per week. Congratulations, that's nearly four times the number I thought.
Three down the waves, walking on sunshine. So even though there's only 70 minutes of today's breakfast show to go, many, many more Terry moments before we go off the air and Ken takes over. And Ken's not going to hold back either between 9.30 and midday when it comes to talking about remembering his good friend and colleague for over four decades. Sorry, Ken. Terry Wogan. Right, choose your Gobsmackers at bbc.co.uk/radio2, our page to Gobsmackers. On the way, your top tenuous to other Terry Wogans. He was ours. Who perhaps is yours?
The sound of winter in Glasgow is the sound of Celtic Connections.
Sitting opposite me now, we have Alan Barrelands Boyd, Terry's last producer on the breakfast show. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Chris. And Barrelands isn't really my middle name.
How did you get that name? How were you given that name?
It was one of, again, one of Terry's many sort of flights of fancy where he had nicknames for everyone. And because Barrelands is a very kind of not very salubrious district of Glasgow, sorry if anyone from Barrelands is listening, and because of the kind of alliteration that was, he just tagged onto it. So I was Barrelands from then on in.
Now, yesterday when you heard the news, I know you were devastated. You came in, you put together a marvellous playlist for that Mark Goodyear show yesterday morning between 9 and 11. But we all had a huge wobble yesterday. I wasn't expecting that news when our boss called us at 8:15 yesterday morning. I was in shock. We were all in disbelief. Today, the clouds are parting a little bit. There's glints and glimmers of sunshine coming through. How do you feel this morning?
I feel much better, and I've been trying to think all of yesterday and last night how Terry would feel. What would he do in these situations?
What would he do?
And, well, he would first of all see the funny side of it. He would say, well, he was a good, you know, he was a good person and he made me laugh. He would want us to do the things, I think, react the way that he would react. And that would be to see those clouds parting and to see the sunshine and think, well, you know, get over the sadness, which we all are very sad. And of course our hearts go out to his family. I mean, because he was such a devoted family man, as Brian Darcy was saying earlier. But I think he would want us obviously to remember him for being the happy, jovial, jolly person. But underneath that, I think, I was saying to you earlier, for me, probably one of his greatest gifts was his incredible imagination. And because he was such a great reader, an avid reader, obviously the best writers and authors in the world have great imaginations. And his imagination was fertile. He was, you know, he could look out the window on a horrible, bleak November morning when it was raining and dark and horrible and paint this amazing picture of a wonderful sunny morning when he's looking
and
at
you
nothing
saw him
else.
Do this, didn't you?
I saw him do it. I was like, my jaw fell. I thought, where is this coming from? And it was just, you know, it was coming from inside his head, and his imagination was incredible. And very childlike in some ways as well.
Very, very childlike, which is also part of his charm. He never let the child within die, that's for sure. So tonight, the one show that's become the Wogan Show, you're going to come along and watch?
I will indeed.
And we'll go and raise a glass afterwards, that'd be brilliant.
We shall toast the old boy.
Alan, thank you so much for coming in to have a chat.
Pleasure, Chris.
Let's cross straight away to Father Brian Darcy, shall we, for today's Pause Thought. Father Brian, are you there again?
Yes, I am, Chris. Okay. Indeed, I am.
So Barrelands on the air. What's he saying? He sounds pretty good himself, doesn't he?
He sounds terrific, and I'm sure we both would think of Polly, who was a producer before Alan came on, and all of whom were very good friends, and we remember how Terry remembered Polly when Polly sadly died too. So for close on 20 years, I was Sir Terry Wogan's guest on Pause for Thought, and when I was down the line, as I am this morning, Terry would introduce me with these words, and now we hop across the Irish Sea to listen to a man who won't even get out of bed to broadcast. it was his way of painting a picture for his audience, the imagination that Alan's just spoken about, and ensuring that I didn't take myself too seriously. Terry was my hero and my friend. We knew each other ever since his broadcasting days in Dublin, and when he came to the BBC, our friendship grew as the years passed. I was very lucky to learn about broadcasting from the master. His superb voice, his uncanny timing, and above all, his impeccable use of language were unique to him. I couldn't do that. What I learned, though, was humility, gentleness, generosity, thoughtfulness, and above all, respect for our listeners. Typically, he oversimplified his broadcasting genius when he said, "Keep your wits about you, be polite, go home, and enjoy your dinner." Home was where Terry found his true self. Lady Helen and the three children were the delight of his life. He met Helen at a tennis hop in Dublin and drove her home from her first date in a bashed-up Morris Minor. Last Thursday, when I visited Terry for the last time, it was the lovely Helen who was still holding his hands over 50 years later, and their children were caring for them as they had cared for their children, with compassion and love. Terry said he wasn't religious. Well, we kidded each other endlessly about that. He claimed he was an atheist. And when he told me about his God, I said, "I don't believe in that God either." "God comes to you disguised as your life," I told him. And he appreciated that. Terry was everything God could want in a human being. He raised our spirits. He encouraged his beloved Tugs. He helped raise millions for children in need. And he made us laugh uproariously at ourselves. What a legacy. Like you, I'm heartbroken. In Ireland, we say, we shall never see his likes again. And we won't. But today, let's just thank God for the wonderful human being that was Sir Terry Wogan.
Bravo, Father Brian. And we can celebrate him for many things, and we can love him and always will for many things. But, Brian, what about this? We can never forgive him for the floral dance, can we?
No, he never forgave himself for it either.
Okay, well, here it comes one more time. We can't avoid this.
I thought I could hear the curious tone of the cornet, clarinet and big trombone, fiddle, cello, big bass drum, bassoon, flute and euphonium. Far away as in a trance, I heard the sound of the floral dance.
Now, we could do a lot worse than re-release that for Children Need this week, couldn't we?
Or maybe the Janet John stories as well.
Yeah, all the whole thing. Let's get it all out there, the Terry package for Children Need. Terry was like a family member. He was in my kitchen for breakfast every morning. My granddaughter always asked what I was laughing at when Janet and John was on, says Mary Mackay in Dumfries. "Morning, Chris. Terry's breakfast show helped me through a dark period in my life. He taught me to laugh again when I never thought I would," says Andy. "Thank you, Terry. I don't know of anyone else who was so cross-generational in the way he was. He was funny and entertaining to all ages. He was the voice of so many people's lives. The world is and forever shall be a little less bright." So Zoe in Chichester. All right, Lynn, we have one more of these for you, and then that's your lot.
Terry and Lynn are back on the air. He plays rock and she frolics. In walks Lynn, shaking loose her hair, grabs Terry's mic, and I just don't believe the kind of stuff that Barrow Lands Boyd allows through.
She's gone. She's finally gone.
Well, yeah, M74.
Group hug, please, for Lynn after this, immediately.
M74 southbound, partly blocked at Les Mahigo. That's junction 10.
Right, come on, guys. Big hug for Lynn. Thank you. At least seven of us there, I'll say. Right, today's top tenuous. Other Terry Wogans. Vassos, off you go.
Yes, we hope he'd have liked this. We think he would. So let's kick off with Sean. At number 10, I started work at Havering Council in 1989. Head of revenue collections was Terry Wogan. "As you can imagine," says Sean, "official letters didn't get taken too seriously." Lynn at number 9, at Havering Council, when our manager Terry Wogan answered the phone, he had to give his name. The look on his face was priceless every time, the "I haven't heard that before" look. At number 8, Lee, I went to school in Barnsley with a girl called Terry Wogan. Ian at number 7, my brother Jim had a huggy bear which was named Teddy Wogan, and Teddy once beat my brother at dominoes. Number six, Sarah. My granny loved Terry Wogan so much, she named her puppy after him, which was a bit confusing in the vets when his name was called. At number five, Sandra. I have long had a client called Terence Wogan, but I still do a double take whenever an email arrives from him in my inbox. Graham at number four. Once, as secretary of our local riding club, a member competed on a horse called Terry Wogan. His owners kept the real Sir Terry informed of the horse's success, and he always responded with interest. At number three, Barry, my firm once sent over an American accountant called Terry Wogan. He had no idea when he arrived. Got a bit of a shock. At number two, Robbie, my dad Terry Wogan is the local DJ down our social club. He's been a local celebrity all of his life because he's been lucky enough to be named Terry. And at number one, it's James. I have an uncle who is called Terry Wogan. He has a son who is called Terry Wogan, and they once met the real Terry Wogan.
There you go, they do exist. Well, that's it for today, and yet another edition of the show that in my wildest dreams I never imagined I would have the pleasure, the honour of hosting. Terry's show, The Breakfast Show on Radio 2, under his management, the best show of its kind there has ever been and ever will be. He baked it, and we've merely been tucking in ever since. We just hope that what he left goes on for a bit longer. Here's Ken.
Well said, Chris. That was lovely. Lovely moment. And we'll see you tonight paying further tribute to Terry on the telly.
Absolutely. Then we're going to have a drink. If you want to stick around, Ken, it could be a long lunch.
That sounds like a long one for me, and I'm used to them, but maybe not today. Thanks, Chris. Great stuff.
You're very welcome.
Well done.